You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Purple Insider is presented by Oakley. Express yourself, build a look that's made for you. When you wear Oakley, there really is more than meets the eye. Try it for yourself. Oakley is not only the best looking, but the best quality. So head on over to Oakley.com for more information today. To another episode of Purple Insider. Matthew Collar and Will Raggetts here of Sports Illustrated sitting outside today in a beautiful day at TCO Performance Center. The only downside is that I forgot to bring my brand new Oakley sunglasses, of which so I look a little less cool, but it is a great day out here. And, you know, we got OTAs to talk about, which is always phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, It's real, like, diehard football stuff. I mean, when you get into training camp, the season's approaching. You got a lot of stuff to talk about every day because they're doing a lot of team periods. Right now, we're deep in the weeds. OTAs, it's May. But it's exciting because we haven't really had real football stuff to talk about in a while. It's been the draft and projecting and all that. Now we get to see these players out on the field. We saw some of them at rookie minicamp, but now it's the whole team with some notable absences that we can get into. But yeah, it's just fun to see him out on the field and be here at TCO.
Okay, so I actually have a takeaway of watching OTA practice and seeing people running around in shorts. But my takeaway is that they're winning the Super Bowl. No, that's not the takeaway. But the takeaway is that everything that we've said about Brian Flores' defense, people moving around, organized chaos, everybody's going to line up in all these different spots. There's a lot of times where OTAs and mini camps kind of create this imagination land where we go, but imagine if this player is used this way. Last year was the Delvin Cook in the slot. It's like, don't do this. He's not going to be a slot receiver. I'm telling you. And it's like, but what if? And like, no. There is no what if. But watching them practice, there was a lot going on the defensive side. It could not have been more opposite from what we saw of Ed Donatell's defense for just our first tiny little snapshot at it.
I think that has to be the biggest takeaway from the practice that we got to see on Tuesday, that just the movement on the defense and the offensive players we're talking about. We talked to some of them after practice, and they're using words like exotic and intense, and the whole thing with Brian Flores that you've been sold on is the aggressiveness. And that's not going to show up, obviously, until the pads are on and they're playing games and things like that, and then maybe in training camp a little bit. But, it did even a little bit just in this OTA setting with the movement, and they're showing some different blitz looks, and they're not giving away everything that they're going to be doing. It's still really early in installing, but, I mean, it was cool to see, without some key players, without Jordan Hicks, Harrison Smith, a few other guys on defense, you got the young guys at linebacker, safety, corner, moving around, showing different blitz looks. Like, Christian Darrisaw had a really telling quote about, like, it's cool for us as an offense to see these different looks because last year we didn't, and then teams would run them in the games and we wouldn't really be prepared for them. So it's going to be great for the defense to kind of be versatile, be aggressive, use all these different chess pieces that they have in different ways. And it's going to be great for the offense to see that in practice every day and be prepared for anything that defenses are going to show them in games.
Aggressive and exotic, also how I would describe you. no, actually, that's probably the complete opposite. But I thought also, as far as the biggest takeaway of what was going on in the field, is just Lewis Seen, just end sentence. Because, I mean, you have to worry about when you have a compound fracture of nerve damage and stuff like that that can really derail a career. You might never be the same after an injury like that, but it seems like the nerve damage part did not happen with him, and he's able to make this recovery quickly. And I don't know if there was hyperbole being brought into the game with Brian Flores talking about just where he fits in and how he looks, but it seemed like people were talking about him looking explosive, looking quick. Matt Daniels talked about thinking that he looked even quicker than he did at the same time last year, which seems impossible for someone who went through what he went through, but I think it does bring about a discussion about where we think he could fit in, or are we getting ahead of ourselves to see an OTA practice and then say, well, of course, he's going to be the big nickel, or he's going to be whatever. Although Joe Juwan Williams is the big everything, just the largest corner
large.
I've ever seen. But what was your kind of feeling about Lewisine being back out there and what we saw from him?
Yeah, I mean, it's remarkable. It's not really a new thing, because he has just seemed to be so ahead of what you would expect from an injury like that for a while. Like, I remember a month or two after, he suffered a compound fracture of his leg, which is a very serious injury. He was like walking around in the locker room without any crutches. And then he's posting videos in the offseason of him working out. And we saw him a couple weeks ago at rookie minicamp looking good. And now, yeah, he's out here in OTAs. And if you didn't know that this guy got his leg like destroyed, messed up very badly less than 8 months ago, you wouldn't be able to point it out and be like, oh, that guy's coming off injury. There's no signs of lingering effects. And I don't want to like necessarily say I know everything about that, because I don't know how exactly he's feeling, but he told us yesterday, I haven't been toned down at all. I feel good. I'm going pretty full. So I think that's an exciting thing for the Vikings. I think there's still a lot we have to see. We haven't really seen him play defense in the NFL at all. Last year before the injury, he was just kind of on special teams, and we saw him a little bit in the preseason. But yeah, I think it's exciting for a player with his skill set, his size, all the things that they talked about in the post-draft last year, like his ability to diagnose things, his ability to kind of, once he diagnoses them, to close really hard and fly to the ball. Those are traits that are going to be huge for a Brian Flores defense. I'm fully expecting him to be a starting safety in week one if he continues on this projection.
I think when you're holding down that position, and of course you mentioned Harrison Smith wasn't there, but holding on to that position at the start of OTAs, considering the recovery, is to me a sign that should be the expectation, that he is a starter on day one. And if he's not, then we know, well, something is wrong there with the way that this defense is clicking with him. And I think logically speaking, it should click with him as being kind of a downhill player. Although I did go back and look, didn't find as much blitzing from him as I would have thought in college. So I don't know if Brian Flores is going to kind of see that, or how hard it is to figure out how to blitz. Like, maybe that's not that difficult. You just run at the quarterback. I don't know. I would think it takes more than that to figure out. But it's really going to depend on the mental element, now that we know that the physical part is okay for Lewisine, and the expectation is that he should be starting in week one. So that kind of brought me to a point of watching Flores' defense, and then we spoke with him today, thinking about, like, how would you categorize your feelings, because we're about feelings on the show, mm-hmm. You know that, about the defense overall. So would you say skeptical, intrigued, dismissive, fascinated? Like, what emotion would you use to describe how you feel about the defense as a whole?
I think fascinated is a good one. I'm just excited and curious to see what it looks like, and to see a defense that their identity and their goal is going to be to take it to the opposing offense and force the issue and kind of dictate things. Whereas last year it was just, we heard all these things about, you know, post-snap movement and muddying the coverage, and they just sat back and they let things happen to them. You want to, as a defense, Not while being over aggressive and taking yourself out of spots and blowing coverages and all that, be aggressive and take it to the offense. And so I'm fascinated about that. I would say I'm cautiously optimistic about what it could be. There's just so much unknown, because when you lose all the veterans that you lost, Dalvin Tomlinson, Za'Darius Smith, Eric Kendricks, all these guys, there's a lot of unknowns. And I think you can talk yourself into, all right, if Lewisine's healthy and producing, if Andrew Booth and Caleb Evans are out there, cornerback. Brian Asamoah just got some praise from Mike Saravo, the new inside linebackers coach. There's all these young pieces that could fit a versatile, I mean, I haven't even talked about Jay Ward, Mekhi Blackman, the rookies, that could fit this versatile, multiple, aggressive defense, but there's so much that we just have to see to actually, you know, believe and have evidence that it's going to happen and that those players are going to be successful.
Don't you love that there's an inside linebackers coach? There's only two inside linebackers. Like, these guys have their own coach.
Yeah.
Just the two of them. I mean, do they...
Well, there's more than two on the roster.
I understand that,
two starters.
There's only two guys that play.
Yeah.
And so this guy only has to really coach those two guys, which we're very close to every player having their own specific position coach.
But that, I mean, that's kind of true for a lot of positions. Like,
quarterbacks.
There's only, like, one quarterback that plays.
It's very complicated.
There's only two running backs that play.
Yeah.
There's only two outside linebackers that play.
But it's not just linebacker. It's inside linebacker specifically.
And that's something they changed last year with the 3-4 because, like, it would be defensive. Like, Andre Patterson was defensive line, so that's tackles and ends. Now it's you got your defensive line coach, your outside linebackers, which are your edge, and then your inside line. So it makes a little more sense in that context. But
well, and when you're requesting interviews, you better get it right. Because it's like, if you can't ask for Chris Rumpf to talk about Danielle Hunter, because they're like, whoops, I picked the wrong two guys that this guy coaches. anyway, neither here nor there. But fascinated is an interesting word for it because... Oh, you know me, you know old me on the show here can be a little bit skeptical of things or critical at times, I would say.
I think it's very fair to be skeptical of a defense with the roster being largely unproven and the numbers last year being what they were.
And that's why when you said optimistic, I would
cautiously.
I would not describe myself there, but just more very interested to see how this plays out because the way that this plays out with a lot of these guys will really dictate what this roster looks like for years to come because so many of them are young. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you look around, you could go, these will be the guys of the next 5 years or these guys will not be here. And both of those possibilities are very real. I mean, if you told me that a Caleb Evans became a 5 to 7 year Viking because everything came together with him and he didn't have any more concussions and everything was good to go, I would say like, okay, I buy that. I mean, he seems to be very skilled, fits man coverage, whatever. Or if you told me that he's not on the team next year, I'd be like, okay, that makes sense. I mean, that was Cam Dantzler last year where in the offseason we talked about Cam Dantzler as if he was like the next great man corner or whatever. He was going to take this big step. It was all Zimmer's fault, which, you know, nothing was really. And then he's gone. He's not even on the team. And I think that outcome exists for so many. I mean, okay, Booth Jr., because he's a second-round pick, will be on the team. But Marcus Davenport, even half of the defensive line. Like, there's just so many players that we have no idea what the long-term outlook is going to be. And I think by the end of training camp, we're going to have some sense of that. But still, it's really going to play out through the whole season.
It's a good point. I hadn't really thought of it like that, but you're absolutely right. I mean, on offense, you have Justin Jefferson, who, unless something goes very wrong, should be here for a long time. TJ Hockenson, both of your tackles. Like, you have these pieces that are young and in their prime, and, like, these are going to be – we're assuming Kevin O'Connell's going to be around for a while. These are going to be staples of the Kevin O'Connell offense. Quarterback, running back, those are a little different. But you have those. Defensively, is there a single guy that you can say confidently will be starting on this defense in 3 years? I mean – I think Lewis Cine, as the former first-round pick, has the best chance, but that's a guy that we haven't seen anything from, like I've said. So, yeah, I mean, maybe Brian Asamoah, but again, we haven't seen anything from him. Booth and Evans have the injuries. Hunter, they got to figure that out. He's got his whole contract situation. Davenport's on a one-year deal. Like, it's tough to know. So that is going to be really interesting about this season is – a lot of evaluation, figuring out who the building blocks are, guys who can stay healthy, guys who fit this defense, and not just this defense, but, I mean, any defense you're going to run because Brian Flores might not be here in a few years. So that to me is going to be a really interesting subplot. All offseason, OTAs, training camp, kind of identifying who your guys are on defense, who your building blocks are, and then moving forward with them.
So let's talk about the guys who are not here. I talked about Justin Jefferson quite a bit on yesterday's show just because people want him traded already for not showing up to an OTA. It does happen.
Seriously?
I'm impressed. I mean, that is a hot take that I did not see coming.
That is all-time off-season brain right there.
He might be, like, I'm thinking about moving. Like, he might be moving. I don't know. Like, who knows why someone would miss an OTA.
He's just a superstar who maybe wants a contract extension and is got a lot of things to do. I don't.
Okay, but that's the question. Do you think, and this is pure absurd speculation because we have heard nothing from him,
yeah,
but he also did not, like, tweet, oh, guys, don't worry, I'm not there. It's not about my extension, which you could easily do if you wanted the world to know that it wasn't about your extension.
That's not something.
So, well, I mean, that's something
you
as could a do
NFL superstar.
Remove speculation. What do you mean? Lamar Jackson tweeted his way all the way through his contract. This is the year 2023. You are a youth still, technically. I mean, that's what people do these days. If they want you to know, they will let you know with their social media. He hasn't done anything like that. But I guess, how seriously are you taking his absence?
I don't think I'm taking it very seriously right now. I mean, I think Jefferson's just kind of in a unique position where, I mean, he's the face of the franchise, but he's also just this mega superstar. Like, he's off doing, hanging out with world famous soccer players in Europe, and he's doing all these different things, and he's huge on Instagram, and like, I don't, not that those things really matter, but I guess it didn't shock me that he's not here when, I don't know, and I don't want to start to paint him as this wide receiver diva, like I'm too good for OTAs, but I don't know, we don't know what he's up to, we don't know why he's not here. I think naturally you go to the contract situation because we know there have been reports that there have been talks about a potential extension that hasn't happened. I would say I don't think it's something to worry about yet. Try not to overreact or call for Jefferson to be traded or burn your 18 jerseys or anything like that. Let's wait until a mandatory minicamp in June. Maybe he shows up before then, but if there's no extension and mandatory minicamp in June, I mean, he has to be here or you start to get fined. So Let's try to be patient, everybody.
I agree with that. When I was doing the live show, I was very surprised at some of the reactions, and I think I probably talked about it similarly to you, like, okay, everybody, whoa, Harrison Smith wasn't there either. I don't think you need to put him in a rocket ship and shoot him to the sun for not showing up to these OTAs. Jefferson has traditionally always shown up for everything, so it is a little bit like, oh, what's going on there? But then I realized why there would be some freak out. Minnesota is why.
Mm-hmm.
That Minnesota sports fans have to prepare themselves for the worst. And I think that a lot of people are already starting to brace for the idea that he does not sign an extension. And then that conversation is had over and over and over and over until he's got an extension about what is going on. And so the clock is ticking here. And normally we don't see a lot of extensions happen in May or June. It's usually when we get into training camp. But every moment that he goes without an extension, all Minnesota sports fans can just rip off the players who had, like, Moss left, and Garnett left,
and Ortiz, and
Diggs,
yeah,
and just like all these players, they left and they hurt us and broke our hearts.
It.
And look at this man and how good he is. Is he going to do that as well? Yeah, I understand the overreaction.
I get it. I'm one of them. I've lived here my entire life. I understand it. And I don't want to come across as the like guy who's being dismissive and saying, hey, your fears aren't justified. You have nothing to worry about. I can't sit here and say there is a 100% chance that Justin Jefferson will be extended this offseason or next and will spend the next 8 years in Minnesota breaking every record and becoming the Hall of Famer and la-di-da and everything's all great. Like, I can't say that for sure. I think that Justin Jefferson really likes Kevin O'Connell. I think he really likes Keenan McCardell. I think he likes being here. He's produced huge numbers here. But if you want to look at it the other way, if you're Justin Jefferson, I saw you wrote about this topic, like, how is he going to think about things and his long-term future here? I mean, he doesn't know who the quarterback's going to be after
right.
this year. And
yep.
I think that's the key thing. He's had great, great individual success with Kirk Cousins. He likes Kirk Cousins. They're very different, different stages of life and personality and all that, but they get along really well. They have a great working relationship and all that. And it's led to great things for both of them. It just hasn't led to a playoff win or more than one playoff appearance. And I think they set a really good foundation with O'Connell, but it's decision time next offseason for the Vikings as to who their quarterback's going to be in 2024. If you're Jefferson and that's like, all right, maybe this is going to be some rookie they bring in. How does he feel about that? Is he starting to talk to other superstars around the league and think about, hey, like, what else could be out there? I don't know. I cannot say that. I have not spoken to him about this. I don't think anybody really has. Like, so I understand the fears, and I get it. I just would say I mean, there's nothing you can do about it, so try to be patient and just see how this plays out. I do think there's dominoes here with the Vikings offseason, mm-hmm. where I think the first thing that's probably going to fall is the Dalvin Cook situation, mm-hmm. and maybe they were waiting till June 1 for cap reasons. That happens. I'm still assuming that's a trade or a release that creates cap space. Then maybe you have some more resources to start coming to the Jefferson's camp and Danielle Hunter's camp and TJ Hockenson's camp and really intensifying some extension talk. So we'll see.
Folks, our new sponsor, Oakley, maybe you've noticed it has taken our show to the next level. Oakley, express yourself and build a look that is made for you. And guess what? That's exactly what I did. Just got a new pair of matte black prism sapphire polar sunglasses from Oakley. And I gotta say, they are a game changer. I'll be wearing them golfing, playing basketball, training camp. It is clear now that I have not been doing anywhere enough for my sunglasses game until now. Oakley is changing the game, and it's time for you to discover a whole new world of possibilities. They are suited for everyday wear with frames and lenses, allowing for an extension of yourself, an expression of personality more than meets the eye. So make a sunglasses upgrade today at Oakley.com. Personally, I am loving my new pair of Oakleys. They even offer prism lens technology. What the heck is that? It is a proprietary technology to Oakley and available for everyday settings as well. If you want to know more, and I know you do, head over to Oakley.com and do your own research there. And while you're at it, get yourself a pair of everyday glasses as well that will change your look for the better. When you wear Oakley, there is more than meets the eye. Try it for yourself. I have worn a lot of sunglasses in my life, and I can assure you that Oakley is not only the best looking, but the best quality out there. Go to Oakley.com for more information today.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I would say that anyone who's concerned about it is not at all being ridiculous based on past history and the fact that he doesn't have an extension yet. It's just not time yet. It's like when the Twins are up 4-2 and they call in the first reliever. Before he's thrown a pitch, there's no reason yet to freak out. Now, as soon as he walks the first batter, gives up a bomb, okay, then gets concerned. That's like if there's no extension by August 15th.
Yeah.
Then I would say start to get nervous. But if you're Justin Jefferson, you don't have to do this now. And that is a very important piece of this. You don't have to sign an extension now. Like TJ Hockenson, you kind of do.
Yeah.
If you're signing
Hunter,
here, you got to do it soon.
Yeah.
Hunter, for sure. You got to do it now. But with Jefferson, you can wait another year and you can see where this whole thing is going before you decide to sign, because there's still fifth-year option, everything else. The only question is when it's someone of that power and of that talent, then comes in the what do you demand a trade? Still very hard to do with no leverage.
Yeah.
But if you start making enough noise in the NFL, eventually someone comes in with three first-round picks, and then you have to do it or whatever. So I don't know. It is a very complicated situation that I think that we don't really have any handle of where it stands right now, other than to know that the Vikings absolutely want to sign him to the extension, and that he's not here for OTAs, and that's like end of our information presently. Now, Cook and Hunter, I don't have much else to say about Cook not being here. I think we know where that's going. They're having Alexander Mattison speak with us. They're putting him on the Twitter. They're like, everything is pointing toward Alexander Mattison season. Hunter, though, not being here, no extension. That one also makes me think the more days that go by, the less likely that becomes of him signing here. And in a way, I would not blame him because he's just been screwed many times by this team with his contract. His original contract was bad. The way that it was handled the first time was unfortunate because of the injury timing. Mm-hmm. Last year, they put a decent amount of cash in his pocket, but at the same time, they didn't extend him. And so you could feel, if you're him, a little disrespected because of like what you guys thought. I was so injured that you wouldn't sign me. Comes back, has a great year. And he's probably putting the dollar figure very, very high. Where's your percentage on Danielle Hunter is a Viking in 2025?
That's a good question. I would say it's like 60%.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, okay. I think it's been a weird situation ever since he signed, prior to the 2018 season, he signed a 5-year, I believe, $72 million deal, which for a guy who had just started for the first time and like had shown some flashes but hadn't really broken out yet, that's a good deal. It's a good long-term security for a former third-round pick. That's life-changing money and all that. And then he goes out in 2018, 14.5 sacks, Pro Bowl, does it again the next year, one of the best edge rushers in the league, youngest player to ever reach 50 career sacks. And all of a sudden, he's thinking, all right, well, maybe I should have bet on myself a little bit more or something along those lines. Because now his $14 million average annual value is just well below where those top five edge rusher types are getting paid. And so it's weird because the Vikings made a smart move to bet on him and to sign him to that. You can't really blame him for signing that at the time, I don't think. And then ever since then, it's just been drama because of that. And that's still, I believe 2023 is the last year of that original 5-year extension. So he's been upset and he's held out and they've moved money around and restructured things and brought money to the front. The two injuries, missing 1.5 full seasons, really complicated things as well in there. And now, like, he's only set to make like $5.5 million this year because he got so much pushed up last year. So it's a strange situation where I don't think either party has acted out of like malicious intent. It's just everybody's looking out for their best interests and trying to make things work. And, you know, Danielle Hunter wants to be paid like the dominant player that he is when he's healthy. I mean, last year he was in a brand new offense where he's standing up for the first time in his life on the edge. And he started a little slow and he finished with 10 sacks and was like 8th in the league in pressures. Like, the guy is still in his prime. He's turns 29 this year, I believe, in October. Still has a few years left, I believe, of his prime with a guy who's that athletic. So, I don't know. To me, he has some leverage now because of the Za'Darius Smith trade. He can be like, hey, you guys kind of need me. You want to roll with Marcus Davenport and Patrick Jones? Like, be my guest. I don't think the Vikings want to do that. So, I think they're going to try to make something work. I think his age, you can give him a 4-year extension or whatever and still feel okay about that. But that would be a big commitment because he's going to ask for big-time edge rusher money. So, I don't know. I still think that something probably gets worked out there, but it's not something I'm super-duper confident in.
Okay, follow-up questions. Number one, if they trade him, what is the expected return?
Well, if you trade him now, the first thing you have to look at with NFL trades is what's the contract, and it's very affordable this year, but it's a 1-year rental, so you're not, I don't think a team is giving up
They're extending it. Whoever he's traded to would have to.
If you extend him, then and that's part of it, then sure.
That would have to be part of it.
Yeah, I think you can still get a first round pick for him. I'm not sure. Maybe you're talking more like what TJ Hockenson was moved for, which is a second and a third and a couple like a late rounder going back. I don't know. I just if you're the Vikings, I guess maybe your timeline is starting to shift younger and younger, but he's still young enough. He's not Eric Kendricks or Adam Thielen or what. Like, he can be in a 3-4 year time horizon still and be a really impactful part of that. You're just – edge rusher is so important that if you trade away Za'Darius Smith and then you trade away Danielle Hunter and you have Marcus Davenport on a one-year deal, a guy who's been consistent with pressures but his sack numbers have really fluctuated, and then you're like – Patrick Jones, third-year breakout, undrafted rookie Andre Carter. Like, I don't think that's something you want to gamble on. I think you want to try to find a way to make this happen with him.
Well, how much would you pay him then? Just go average annual value. Actually, no, work out the entire contract with bonuses right here on the show right now. Play Rob Brzezinski. But no, I mean, how much per year AAV would you
Because the top edge rushers... The T.J. Watts and Miles Garrett and those guys are at like 25 now, aren't they? I mean,
even more,
north
yeah,
of that, even
pushing 30.
Yeah, I think if I'm the Vikings, you point to the injury history. You point to you're about to be 29. You're not 26 anymore.
But then he could be like, well, then trade me.
Well, yeah, I think I would still be cool giving him 20 or in low 20s, but that might be disrespectful to him. I don't know. This is why I'm not in the front office trying to work these things out. It's tough. That's why it's not resolved yet. There's a lot that both sides have to consider here. I think the Hockenson one is probably the most simple, straight up. Like,
we're getting to that.
We'll get to that. It makes sense for them to extend him with how well he complemented Jefferson and fit into this offense. And you give him 14 or 15 million a year as one of the top tight ends, I think. That works for everybody, but there's reasons why none of these have been done yet, and there's why we're sitting here talking about all three or four of these guys.
Well, Hunter sort of reminds me of Kirk in a way, where I think they do like Kirk, but I don't think they like him at 40 mil a year for the next 3 years. Mm-hmm. I think they do like Hunter, but they don't like him at 27 mil a year for the next 4 years, mm-hmm. right? And I think that Kirk has a right to ask for the same money or better than Daniel Jones. And I think that Danielle Hunter, production-wise, has a right to ask for the same money as some of the highest-paid guys at the DN position or outside linebacker, depending on which position coach you want to go through. But at the same time, it is a young defense, and that would be tying up a lot of money to one person. That I think that the flexibility cap-wise – they're not going to have a ton of it next year because of the Kirk dead cap situation if he leaves and all that. But if you're looking to create as much of that as you possibly can, like, think about this situation. If you were to get a second and a fourth from a team for Danielle Hunter and you sign Leonard Floyd, he hasn't signed yet, right? So he's still out there.
He's out there.
So he can still pressure the quarterback in a short-term situation. He's like 31 or 32, so he's still out there. Or Melvin Ingram. You get some guy who's going to give you like 600 snaps, something like that. You don't lose, at least it going off the side of a building when it comes to production for this year. And then you're hoping that Davenport has it all come together. But then next year, you can spend the money that you would have been spending on Hunter to sign some other edge rusher if you have to. Mm-hmm. Or you're drafting an edge rusher in the second round with the pick that came from him. So the extreme short term is, this is awful. I mean, because you'd much rather have Danielle Hunter. But in the even 1 year down the road long term, you're talking about a lot of extra cap space that you would not have. And when someone's in Danielle's situation, you can only fiddle so much with that cap. It's not like spreading it out is much harder than someone on their rookie deal. So he's going to have a super high cap hit almost no matter what you do if you're paying him $25 million per year. I think that's the case to move him.
Okay, I think you've talked me into it a little more, being a little more open to it than I maybe previously was. I guess if you're Danielle Hunter, you have to think like, all right, if the Vikings aren't going to give me $25, $27 million a year, is there a team out there that will? And there are teams with healthier cap situations than the Vikings that might be able to afford that, but they might also look at his injury history and like they don't. There's no team out there that knows him and what he can do as well as the Vikings do. So I don't know. That would be part of it to me. But yeah, you've talked me into that being a survivable possibility a little bit more as the team continues to kind of refresh and get younger. I just think when Danielle Hunter is healthy, the impact that he has, I don't know. To me, it would be if you can work out something where you're giving him 23 to 25 million over like 3 years, I think you could talk me into that and figuring out the cap around, and especially if you're gonna move on from Kirk and figure things out. Rob Brzezinski can figure things out, like, but you're right, there's a lot going on. Cook's gonna be gone, we're pretty much in agreement on that. But if you're talking about Jefferson big money extension, Hockenson, how does Hunter fit into that? Darrisaw's coming up for sure. You're already paying Brian O'Neill a good amount of money, and you're going to have the dead cap for Kirk next. It's all the salary cap stuff is always just kind of a fascinating puzzle here.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
That's the thing, is that I think one of the biggest issues is that Rob Brzezinski is not going to have – he's the Vikings cap guy, if people don't know that. And much more now than just the cap guy. So give the man his credit. One of the more influential people in the front office. But that's his area of expertise. There's only so much that he can do with somebody who is asking for $27 million a year. That's not out there, that number. I just assume he's looking for money that puts him up among the elite edge rushers because that's what his production is. You can't make that cap hit be $15 or $12 million. It's going to be in the 20s. It's going to be pretty high. So timing that all out is pretty challenging, I think, for them. And again, that's why it hasn't happened yet, more likely than not. This ownership does like to make sure they pay their guys, but we've always pinned it on Kirk, and rightfully so, because it's always the biggest cap hit for Kirk. But they have also always had this small group of players that have crazy high cap numbers, and they've had to just patch up a lot of other places. And I wonder if there's a part of Kwesi Adofo-Mensah that doesn't want to do that anymore. Like, we can't have six players who make all the money and then everybody else just has to kind of be the Bashaud Breeland signing or the Sheldon Richardson signing that's just patching over these problems. How about with Hockenson? Because he was asked yesterday about his contract situation. And he said the thing everyone says, like, oh, you know, I want to be here. And I'd love to hear the first guy be like, nah, I'm going to shop around. We'll see.
But I don't really like it here.
You know what? I'm going to go visit some other teams. I'm going to talk to my guys around the league. And, you know, we'll see. But I actually do think that Hockenson is a very good fit for Minnesota.
He's like a Midwest guy. Yeah, I can believe that he the numbers he put up in – those last 10 games in the playoff game, like I can believe him when he says that he wants to be here and that it makes sense for his career to be here.
Okay, but here's the one issue is that's another expensive guy.
Yeah.
And tight ends are pretty cheap in comparison to wide receivers when you talk about the elite guys. But this is a top five tight end, which means top five tight end money. Do you think it is a fundamentally good idea to sign him to a five-year $15 to $20 million extension?
Yeah, I think it can work, because I think if you look at him as like almost your pseudo wide receiver two, then that maybe becomes a little bit. And he's not a wide receiver; he's a tight end.
Right.
But the numbers that he was able to put up and what he can do athletically, he's not like Kyle Rudolph. Like he is more athletic than Kyle Rudolph ever was in terms of downfield speed, the ability to stretch the seam. I mean, Kyle Rudolph was an unbelievable red zone threat and big body, great hands and all that. But Hockenson has a little more of the mobility to him and the twitchiness that does not make him prime Adam Thielen as a wide receiver, but it makes him somebody that you can really heavily utilize in your passing game. And then he's also, from what we saw last year, good enough as a blocker to be kind of a quality every down player. So I think you can do that. I think his age fits in with the timeline. I think he complements Jefferson really well. I think the fact that you just drafted Jordan Addison and are going to have that guy on a rookie contract for the next 4 to 5 years helps that whole kind of situation in the passing game come together. I don't, they're not going to like pay, KJ Osborne's not going to need a lot of money if you want to bring him back or if you want to replace him with Jalen Naylor or whatever it might be down the road. So I think it can work. I was just looking at this the other day. The top tight end salary in the league is like Darren Waller at $17 million. Mm-hmm. You've got Kelsey and Andrews and Goddard and all those guys are at $14 to $15. So is Hockenson going to be like, I need to be the – oh, we got some mosquito slapping
going
on.
Yeah, we got some mosquito going on. Sorry if that's
– No. This is part of the outdoor podcasting
setup. Minnesota experience.
Yeah.
They are back, by the way.
Yeah, they're coming back.
Oh, man.
But I don't know what Hockenson is going to demand or need to make that happen. I think if you can do it at 15 for 4 years or whatever, I think that can make a lot of sense with this offense. But you see, the look you're giving me tells me you disagree.
If I'm Mr. Hawk, here's what I'm thinking. Or if I'm his agent, because he's thinking about football.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking this guy was on a pace for like 105 catches or something last year. He played 11 games and he caught 70 passes or something. I mean, playoffs included.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Those 2 games against the Giants alone, he had
10 for 10 for 129 yards.
Yeah, it was the playoff game.
So even though you have all these other receivers, O'Connell's going to throw the ball. I think that there will be a split in receptions between Addison and Osborne. And Jefferson's going to get his. But a lot of football is going to go on, you know. Do I have to say 4th and 8? I'm sorry. I just have to say a lot of balls on 4th and 8 getting checked down to TJ Hockenson. That's just unnecessary, but I can't not. No, he's going to get the ball a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, he became that sort of security blanket that Kyle Rudolph never was for Kirk Cousins. He just seemed to connect really well with Hockenson. So if you're projecting, if you're his agent and you're thinking, Stu could catch like 95 passes, what am I really worth on the market if I catch 95 passes? It ain't 15. It's 20,
yeah.
Right? Highest paid tight end in the NFL,
right? If you flip it around from what I just said to justify for the Vikings of him being like a wide receiver, his camp can turn that around and be like, all right, if I'm going to be like the number two target in this passing game, yeah, mm-hmm, I should be making $18 million at least.
Not only that, but the thing that I talked with Hockenson yesterday about, and he was very interesting in talking about, was moving around,
yeah,
being the move tight end. And I looked at it with the Vikings, 50% of his snaps were not in line. So he was playing outside or I'm getting all the bugs right now. I thought it was the middle of the day. We would be fine out here. He's talking about moving around to different positions. I think they'll play more 12 personnel. So you got a couple tight ends on the field with Josh Oliver. And he's just going to be – oh, man, come on. I think he's just going to be such a major part of what they're doing in the passing game and being all over the field that he's going to catch a lot of balls and he's going to have a chance to be the highest paid tight end in the league. And from that perspective, do you bet on yourself? Like, he hasn't had major injuries, little nicks and cuts here or there. I mean, it's risky to do because they will put a lot of money in front of you and say, would you like all this money right now? But there's also, if you make that bet, you could get a lot. And I also wondered if the Josh Oliver acquisition was not just about improving the running game, but also hedging a tiny bit for someone who does have receiving ability. And if TJ Hockenson does not want to sign that contract, then they've got somebody else that might be a long-term option for them.
Yeah. No, it's another one. I mean, all these situations are really fascinating. I mean, not to overuse that word, but you could see all of them going both ways. I mean, I think the Jefferson one is like he's just on a different level of his stardom and his value to this team and his value to the franchise as the face of the franchise is different. So I think that's got to be from the Vikings just priority absolute priority number one is Jefferson. And then you got decisions to make on Hockenson and on Hunter, and what your plans are, how much money it would require to keep them around, how that fits into your picture and your long-term situation. But yeah, you're right. I think Hockenson can make a case that, and his camp can make a case that, like, he is the second most important pass catcher on this offense, pretty clearly. With Jordan Addison's unproven, KJ Osborne is more of a secondary weapon. So that should be the highest paid tight end in football. And what should that be here, or could that be elsewhere? Could he test the market? That's going to be another one to watch. I think the Vikings also, like, you always have a little bit of leverage in that, like, with Jefferson, for example. He's under contract for one more year on the rookie contract, fifth year option.
Yep.
Then you could, like, franchise tag him. That would be expensive. But you could theoretically, that's three more years of control right there.
Correct.
Hockenson's got his fifth year option this year. It's like $9.4 million. Then you could franchise tag him for, I don't know, what would it be, 13 or 14 as a tight end or something like that the year after. Like, so these things don't have to happen now, which is why I think everyone needs to be patient or try to be, because – it's just going to be talks throughout the summer and leverage it both ways. And I mean, we saw, like, Brian O'Neill and Dalvin Cook are two that come to my mind that happened, like, I want to say in, like, late August, early September, like right before the season started. So that Dalvin Cook one didn't age very well from Rick Spielman, but the Brian O'Neill one has.
Who would have ever seen it coming that a running back contract would not age well? So last thing for you. If none of it gets done and they start the season, so there's no Hockenson, mm-hmm. no Jefferson. Okay, the Danielle Hunter thing has reached ahead. It has to, something has to happen there. But let's just say that, I don't know. I there's no resolution that has him hitting the field week one, I don't think.
Yeah.
But let's say that one gets resolved, but everything else is kind of left up in the air. I think it becomes very hard to say, how do you feel about this team's overall direction? Because it is unsolved with Kirk Cousins. It's sort of unsolved with key offensive players for the future. And on the defense, there's so much up in the air that we talked about at the beginning of the show that I guess I will feel, like, very unsettled about the future of where this entire thing is going. I think that they did resolve a lot of stuff and moving on from Adam Thielen, moving on from Eric Kendricks, like clearing out some of the old and bringing in some of the new. But I still feel like it'll be kind of teetering in this very weird place of not knowing, are you ready to win? Are you not ready to win? Like, where does this thing stand for the cap future? I think it'll all kind of be confusing unless some of these things are locked into place by the time they hit the field.
I agree. I think unsettled is a good word. It's a franchise that, as everyone knows, has been in the middle, in limbo, in purgatory, if you will, for a while now. And that starts obviously with Kirk Cousins and what you can do as a team with him as your quarterback and with the amount that you're paying him. And then it extends to all these other pieces around, and we've had this conversation for off seasons upon off seasons now, like, where are you? And they use the term competitive rebuild, and that's just a fancy way of describing the situation of being in the middle. Like, we're trying to win, and hey, they won 13 games last year, but they weren't very good. And so are you going to try to win again? And some of them, like, you bring in Byron Murphy and Marcus Davenport, and those are moves to help you now. They're also guys who are like 25, 26 years old, so they kind of fill both worlds. Are you going to go all in on keeping Danielle Hunter and TJ Hockenson and Justin Jefferson and all these things and win now? Or at some point, will they ever really kind of pivot into a full rebuild? And that's something you could argue that they should have done going back years and years. But when you're a GM and you have, or a head coach, and you don't have that job security, I can understand why Rick Spielman didn't do that in the latter years of his tenure, and he ended up getting fired anyways. But
sure did.
In part, because there wasn't a clear direction, and I think this team, they got it right with Kevin O'Connell, it seems, and that alone gives you some sort of different direction and a way that you're progressing with the franchise. And I really like the Brian Flores hire. I think there are some intriguing young pieces on this team. The offensive tackles you've got set. You have the best receiver in football here. You want to keep him here for a while, but you're right. They're still in that middle where they're not really declaring all the way one way or another. And there are a lot of teams like that. You don't have to be either the Chiefs or the Bears. Like it's a big spectrum in between. I mean, you can argue that you want to be one or the other.
I was going to say, don't you though?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think you want to be, but the reality is that a lot of teams aren't, and they're on varying shades in between, and that's what makes the Vikings are never a boring team to cover, because there's always so much stuff that could happen, and it could lead to this, and we're just waiting for some dominoes to fall here, and to see kind of the direction that this thing goes in.
Yeah, that's why this offseason is weird, and this season is going to be weirder. But I've always thought that at some point, sort of time comes for you, or rebuilds come for you, mm-hmm. in all sports, but especially football, where you can win 13 games and win every one score game, or you can lose every one score game. Like, how about the Raiders last year? The rebuild kind of came for them, although they're dumb, so they're like signing Jimmy Garoppolo and not living in reality, but franchise tagging their running back. Like, they don't know what they're doing. They're just not a smart franchise. Maybe with Brady they'll be smarter, but I don't think so. But if you were the Raiders, they should have been drafting a quarterback. They should have been the team to trade up to number one. They should be tanking this year for Caleb Williams. Like, they're not, because they don't know what they're doing. But this team has kind of been that for years. It's like, well, you go, well, Jimmy Garoppolo is their quarterback. They're kind of middling. It's like, well, Jimmy Garoppolo is kind of your quarterback also, and you're kind of middling also in the NFC. So they've kind of been that version. And if they have that season – if they have that year that the Raiders had last year, where they lost every one-score game and they had a lot of bad luck, then what happens then? Like, then are you kind of tossed into a full rebuild, and then you look back and go, should we have done this years ago? And the answer is, yes, you should have. But if they go throwing all this money around and they sign Hockenson and they sign Hunter, and then it's going to be like, well, you can't do that then. Then mm-hmm. you end up staying in that same spot. If you don't win and if you don't have an answer at quarterback, very, very interesting problems to address. And we'll do it inside podcasting next time, where we're not being bit up by mosquitoes. But I appreciate
it. Yeah, we powered through
time.
Here. This was some good outdoor podcasting stuff.
This was like being when your professor says we're having class outside.
Yeah,
you know, like,
it sounds really good. And then ants, maybe it's a little too hot and there's bugs
or whatever.
And,
yeah.
Beautiful day, though.
Good times. So thanks for your time, as always. And thank you all for listening.
Football.
Football.